Oh my gosh. What are we, 30 seconds in and there's 2 minutes? Oh no. I'm sorry, guys. I almost choked on my dang tea while listening. I was not expecting that. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sheep Get Sheared podcast. I'm your host, Austin Creed, and my friends, today we're going to discuss how the church has failed men. Now, I want to make a quick little distinction. Number one, the church has not failed in every respect, necessarily, but we're going to discuss in full detail why the church is failing and how it's failed men since World War II, quite frankly. So we're going to have that conversation today. And my friends, throughout this show, if you have anything that you want to add to the conversation, please don't feel like your voice doesn't matter, because it certainly does. So I would love to hear what you have to say. Just let me know as we continue on with the show. But the main topic that we're going to discuss about how the church has failed men since World War II is this idea of when the strong men went off to fight, every man who was able to in World War II was drafted or joined voluntarily. And then when all the men left, the only people that were left to run the church services, the church outreach, the church community functions were the women, the men who were ineligible to fight, and then the children. So the atmosphere of the church changed quite a bit. And you'll see how the church has changed quite a bit. I'm not the first person to address this. However, there is a very stark dichotomy between how the church treats women and how it treats men. It's very rare that men are held to the same standard as women. Men are held to an extremely high standard in the church, whereas women, they tend to be more forgiving and more accepting of the BS and the baggage, versus for men, the bar is extremely high and it seems like you can't win no matter what you do. So what we're going to do is we're going to show clips on the show today of exactly what I'm talking about. And throughout this show, if you want to chime in, let your voice be heard, sound off, feel free to do it in the comments below. You can leave timestamps as to what exactly you're discussing. You can address what I've said. You can address other people in the comments, whatever you want to do. This is an open forum for you. But without further ado, I think it's about time I stopped waffling, I stopped delaying, and let's hop in, shall we? Let's see what this gentleman's got to say. He's a pastor, apparently. I don't know what church, but he says he's a pastor in his bio, so let's see what he has to say.
We understand that there's now two types of men in this world. Men that believe in providing and taking care of the family, old-fashioned, or men need a partnership and want to go 50-50 to help build their empire. But I will tell you this, if a man is over 30 years old, he should be paying a toll. He should already have his life together, should be spoiling and tricking on you. If he's 30-plus and not doing that, you will never have that. And all you will be doing for the rest of your life is going 50-50. How does that even sound? Let that sink in.
Oh God, I got Pastor Ray Ray over here trying to give me advice about being a brokey.
What?
Gentlemen, this is what I'm talking. This is a perfect example of what I'm talking about. Okay? This is exactly what I'm talking about. Let's reverse that for a second. Do you hear a pastor saying, "Hey, these women are overweight, they're single mothers, they're only getting with you out of convenience, not out of actual love"? Where is that conversation at? I would love to know, because no, I don't hear anybody really discussing that. And the few pastors who do, you don't really hear from them because they get canceled or get thrown off the platform for preaching what the Bible actually says, instead of, what popular culture wants you to think or what was politically correct. And what the people, they give you what the people want to hear, the convenience side of things, not the, "Oh shoot, that was some real hot takes right there" type of mentality. And without further ado, I'm going to give you another example. You want another one? I know you're thirsting for it. But before we get into the next example, the first thing I really want to mention to everybody is, number one, this might offend you, and this is a perfect example of the problem in our culture today. And we need to be aware that a
My
lot
money.
of stereotypes exist for a reason when it comes to how do I put this? No, I'm not going to put it delicately. When we realize why men are leaving the church, especially the younger men, number one, because the older men lack the fire and the brimstone, because they want to be as non-threatening as possible. They want to be as soft and politically correct and everything as possible to a large degree. And this is no better summed up than this gentleman right here. Let's let him speak his piece.
It's her money. Now, if she got a job, her money is not my money.
That's right.
My money is my money, and her money is her money.
Right.
My money is my money. My money is her money, and her money is her money. My money, it belongs to her, and her money belongs to her. Her money don't belong to me.
That's right.
Nope.
That's right.
Her money do not belong to me, because God tell the man, you work.
You work. That's
you
right.
You sweat.
Your brow.
Your brow.
That's right.
If she's a good woman, and there is something that needs to be done in the house, and if I'm where I can't do it, she'll step up the plate. But I ain't looking for her to carry the load.
That's right.
I ain't looking for her to carry the load.
That's right.
God commanded.
God command a man.
Man to work.
Work by the sweat of his brow.
His what?
Evelyn, what is the woman's command to do, sir? I mean, I could see you're going off on the men, which is all well and good, but I can't help but notice you left out the part where the woman's supposed to be deserving of that. You see, nobody's entitled to anything. I don't care if you're man, woman, alien, hybrid, vampire. I don't care what you are. No one's entitled to anything in this life, okay? You're not entitled to something because you're a man. You're not entitled to something because you're a woman. People earn the things that they get. And one of the problems of ambition in our culture, a lot of younger men, they're not really achieving to be something in this life. They're very down for the socialism. They're down for doing the bare minimum. They're down for going 50-50. Look, the whole 50-50 conversation to me is idiotic. The reason being, I think it's a masculine thing to do to pay for everything. However, you don't pay for everything for people who don't deserve it, quite frankly, who haven't earned that. You don't do it for just anybody, because that's just dumb. You do it for people who have earned it, who have stepped up to the plate, and in the pastor's words, not people who just say on the internet they deserve something, and then you're like, oh yeah, you deserve that thing. No, you don't. You don't deserve anything. And this is what really is driving young men away from the church. It's not, they're not leaving the faith per se. They're not leaving the spirituality per se. They're leaving the organized religion, Religion Incorporated, where it's just a grift to get money. Because if they actually cared about the word, they'd preach that. They wouldn't preach this, what I called Crimson Christianity version of the scripture, where it's all about inclusion, DEI version of Christianity, where crimson is the color of communism. And when you look at how much rhetoric is pushed about acceptance and love and not fire, brimstone, and accountability and whatnot, you quickly discover that a lot of pastors, there are some who are not like this, but a lot of them are very wishy-washy, lukewarm, and they want people to accept them and be loving, and they want to hyper-focus on love, acceptance, and those aspects of God. But then they want to leave out the part where God says, I'm justice, I am vengeance, I am wrathful. I mean, for God's sakes, read the Old Testament. Somebody else read the Old Testament? God ain't playing in the Old Testament. He lets you know, hey, this is what I said, and if you didn't do it, don't worry. I'm gonna show you that I meant what I said. If people forget that aspect because it's uncomfortable. People want to be comfortable. Comfort is the worst addiction, most dangerous addiction you can have. And I stand by those words. Speaking of words that I stand by, I do not stand by what I think you're about to hear. I don't know what she's going to say in full, but just out the gate, it's a panel of women pastors. So this should be really interesting. Let's see what she got to say.
Yes. You know, something that I've been praying a lot about lately, and my heart really, really goes out for single moms because they carry a lot.
Yeah.
But I wanted to tell you something that the Lord showed me, and that is that you are not a Hagar, you are a Sarah.
Oh, no.
And you don't have to have a Hagar mentality anymore. You don't have to go away and hide under a tree and put your baby under a tree and think that they have no destiny because you've been through a lot and because...
Oh my gosh. What are we, 30 seconds in and there's 2 minutes? Oh no. I'm sorry, guys. I almost choked on my dang tea while listening. I was not expecting that. Fine, let's keep going. Maybe she'll make a good point that I might agree with. Who knows? What else?
Because you're all alone. You need to get up out of there, because what God told Hagar was, he said, get up. I am the God who sees you.
Oh, look at this drag up here. Oh, oh no. I'm sorry. I can't make this up, dude. I have not seen this beforehand. I try actively not to. All I want to make sure is there's no cringy music in these TikToks that I think will be good for the show. I don't watch this beforehand. Bro, look at... this is the image of the modern church right here. The woman being like, oh yeah, praise the Lord, hallelujah. I'm loving this bro, you know, bro with feminism stuff. I'm loving it. Oh my gosh, man. Oh no.
This is the worst kind of discrimination. The kind against me.
I can already hear them in the comment section right now. All this should be good.
God sees you. When you think nobody else sees you, when you're getting words from heaven and God is speaking to you, but you're on a Hagar mentality. You are a Sarah.
Yes.
You are a daughter of Sarah. And I don't care what kind of circumstances you've been through. I don't care what kind of things have come against you. I don't care what you think. You're about to become a mom. You don't have enough. You don't know what it takes. I'm just going to go hide and die and stay there.
Is this just a bunch of like old 304s who are now out here trying to repackage themselves and be like, oh, don't worry. I know you're like, I don't know what, 35, 40. And I know you've been in the streets for a while, but you know, no, you're not Hagar. No, you deserve the Sarah treatment. You deserve to be the carrier of the promise. You deserve everything. Why? Oh, we haven't gotten that part yet. But we're halfway through the video and all we have is a giant hive mentality of, oh, I deserve. I'm a Sarah. What does that make me, Abraham? No. What? Oh my goodness. Are they gonna let other... oh, speaking of Sarahs, you know what Sarah, or Sarai actually is the, Hebrew name that she actually had before the covenant? You know what she did about the Hagar part that you left out? If you're Sarahs, are you gonna let the men have, concubines on the side chicks? Oh, I doubt that, because that's not gonna happen, but... it's just on only parts of the Sarah they like, right? Just the parts that benefit them, right? Yeah, that sounds about right. Okay, continue, Miss Powerful.
Because I don't have a future, because I don't have a man. Let me tell you, honey, you are a daughter of...
I don't need Abraham. I'm a Sarah, but I don't need Abraham. Do y'all see why men are leaving the church, man? Oh my goodness, this is... I gotta stop drinking this tea. I almost choked twice. Bumped my dang teeth in the front of it, too. Oh.
A destiny. Your daughter and your sons will be nation builders.
No, you know, statistically, single mother raised kids are not nation builders. They're prison population. They are pookies, ray rays, drug dealers, pimps, prison population numbers. Yeah. That's statistically what they become. If you want to get mad at me for saying that, don't get mad at me. Go read the statistics. Statistics are all over the place. So, for anybody who thinks that, single mothers' children are going to be nation builders, no, statistically speaking, they end up in prison. Or on drugs. Just throwing that out there.
They will be powerful men and women of God. Don't think that just because you're a single mom, that you don't have what it takes, that your kids can have a better future.
Because statistically they don't, but okay.
You have to look around and say, oh, they're better. They have a better family. You are a daughter of Sarah. Start thinking.
Okay, I've had enough of this. I can't. it's good comedy. This is great comedy if it wasn't so dangerous. Oh, so they're saying, even though Sarah wasn't a single mother, she was the mother of Isaac, who then became, who was the father of Jacob, who was the father of the 12 tribes of Israel. Apparently Abraham was optional, and apparently you don't need no man, and apparently if you're a single mom, your kids are going to be nation builders, except statistically they end up in prison. But you know what, that's an unfortunate reality that we don't like, and of course they're going to push that, because you know, God sees you. Yeah, God also sees the bad things that you're doing and all the sin. Speaking of sin, you know what's interesting? pastors like to highlight the idea that money is the root of all evil, when in fact it is the pursuit of money. Maybe that the love of money. It's not the pursuit, it's the love of money that is said to be the root of all evil. When I would say money is a tool like anything else, whether it's a pea shooter or a dollar bill or a power tool, it doesn't matter. These are all things that are tools that are only as good or bad as the person using them. And the people with money can have the capability to do the most good on this planet. And so when I see a lot of pastors talking about how, oh, money no good. Being poor is good. Being poor is not a virtue. Just like being rich does not automatically make you evil. In fact, I've met a lot of poor people who are super nasty, super unhappy, super aggressive. And I met rich people who were extremely chivalrous, extremely giving and generous with their money. And they did a lot of good for a lot of people, paying a lot of salaries, paying a lot of attention to the problems of the world. And they do a lot of good. So we're going to really get into an alternative version of what sin could be. I'm not saying this is necessarily biblical. This is food for thought from Outwitting the Devil by Napoleon Hill. And I want you to see what he has to say. It's extremely insightful.
Let us dismiss the public school system and go back to the churches for a moment. All my life, I have heard clergymen preaching against sin and warning sinners to beware and repent so they could be saved. But I've never heard any of them tell me what sin is. Will you give me some light on this subject?
Sin is anything one does or thinks which causes one to be unhappy. Human beings who are in sound physical and spiritual health should be at peace with themselves and always happy. Any form of mental or physical misery indicates the presence of sin.
Name some of the common forms of sin.
It is a sin to overeat because that leads to ill health and misery. It is a sin to overindulge in sex because that breaks down one's willpower and leads to the habit of drifting. It is a sin to permit one's mind to be dominated by negative thoughts of envy, greed, fear, hatred, intolerance, vanity, self-pity, or discouragement, because these states of mind lead to the habit of drifting.
I want to pause him right there. It's interesting to make the distinction between the love of money and the pursuit of money. Money is not evil, and one of the important points of this book that Napoleon Hill discusses is he believes that the church, the public school system, are huge issues, not necessarily because of what they're teaching, but how they're teaching. Because the whole point is to think for yourself. His whole argument, that I very strongly agree with, by the way, is that you must not outsource your thinking to others. And that's one of the things he highlights in the church and in the secular world as well, where people let others think for them. They don't say, okay, I'm going to really digest this. I'm going to break this down. I'm going to listen to this. Do I even agree with this? Do I want to agree with this? They'd have these inner debates because they want to make sure that they are balanced. You know, I'm not a communist. I'm probably the farthest thing you'll find from it. But when Karl Marx said that opium of the masses was religion, I can kind of see why he would say that, because for a lot of people, they use religion as a means to numb their pain, as a means to let others do their thinking for them, and as a reason to kind of make up for their lost time in a lot of ways, or to make up for past sins. And it's extremely interesting that he would say that. I don't agree with him, but I could see why he would say that. A lot of people would immediately reject that and say there's no way that could possibly be true in any world. I could see it being potentially true to some people or people who take it too far. You have to be able to think for yourself. And a lot of pastors, I don't think, are doing that. And in doing so, they're alienating a lot of young men because they're becoming unrelatable. They're becoming out of touch. I did a show before on how tradcons, traditional conservatives, for those of you who are not up on the lingo, why a lot of them are sounding out of touch. And a lot of these pastors, they fall under that, or they fall under the banner of the Rainbow Riders or of Crimson Christianity, like the communists. communism wing of Christianity, which is basically just a social club with a cross on the front of the church. My friends, we need to really open our minds and think for ourselves. And even if you find out that you agree with everything that you've been taught about the scriptures and everything, that's fine, but at least think about it. At least entertain the notion that it could maybe be wrong. I'm not saying it is. I'm saying it could be. And that's what he talks about in this book, is thinking for yourself, because then you cannot drift. Let's let him continue.
It is a sin to cheat, lie, and steal, because these habits destroy self-respect, subdue one's conscience, and lead to unhappiness. It is a sin to remain in ignorance, because that leads to poverty and loss of self-reliance. It is a sin to accept from life anything one does not want, because that indicates an unpardonable neglect to use the mind.
Is it a sin for one to drift through life without definite aim, plan, or purpose?
Yes, because this habit leads to poverty and destroys the privilege of self-determination. It also deprives one of the privilege of using his own mind as a medium of contact with infinite intelligence.
Are you the chief inspirer of sin?
Yes. It is my business to gain control of the minds of people in every way possible.
Can you control the mind of a person who commits no sin?
I cannot, because that person never permits his mind to be dominated by any form of negative thought. I cannot enter the mind of one who never sins, let alone control it.
This is a very important distinction he's drawing here, because it's not what you necessarily think to be true, that this all stems to the idea of thinking. So let's think back to the video we talked about that was on earlier with these women talking about how it doesn't matter if you're a single mother, it doesn't matter if you're living a debaucherous lifestyle, it doesn't matter if you alienated the father from the kids, it doesn't matter if you're sabotaging your kids and their future. They say none of that matters. Let's think about that for 2 seconds and think, wait a minute, does that make any sense? Well, of course it doesn't. But there are pastors who are still saying these things as if they are true, when in fact they are not true, and it's meant to make people feel happy, but instead it's leading them to drift because it's not letting them think for themselves. It's not inspiring people to debate both sides and say, wait, could this be true? Could this not be true? I hope you do that with every content you watch, whether it's mine or somebody else's. You have to think about things through, and this is what we talk about, the difference between ambition and avarice. Avarice is pure greed, versus ambition is just the accomplishment or the pursuit of a worthy goal. Problem is, a lot of people don't even have worthy goals. And so instead, they'll look at these people on social media, and they have tremendous influence over them. And the reason why I'm not someone of the traditional religious alignment is because a lot of it is just pure sacrimony, and a lot of it's just going through the motions and posturing and everything else. But there is one pastor, apparently this guy is a reverend, I don't know who he is, but apparently he's a reverend, and he says, kind of similar to what Napoleon Hill was talking about, with money being spiritual, tying in the end of the religious side of it, kind of, with the money, ambition, and avarice side of it. So let's hear what he has to say.
Shouldn't the minister be more concerned with the spiritual qualities of life rather than the material and financial qualities of life? Isn't that your calling?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, money is spiritual, everything is spiritual. And to me, money is more than dollars and cents. To me, money is the getting power of self-awareness. In the marketplace of life, a person always gets that which belongs to his self-awareness, to his self-image. And I call the riches of life health, happiness, love, success, and prosperity.
Napoleon Hill talks about that at length. I wanted to pause that for a second, and I wanted to tie this back in again to thinking for yourself and realizing how much of this is spiritual. I don't know if I agree with him that everything is spiritual. You could try to look at everything from a spiritual lens, but again, it all comes down to how you see things. You could see nothing as spiritual or everything is spiritual. That all depends on how you see things, which is another way that the church has failed men, is they're only really giving them one side, which is all too often the woman's side, and the side of comfort and love, not the side of accountability, the side of tradition, and the side of being realistic about the approach to life, to faith, to relationships, and so on. And this is why a lot of young men are checking out and they're leaving. Number one, because a lot of the women's bad behavior is excused, and their behavior for even questioning a lot of what the pastor says, they immediately get
the gavel and the book thrown at them by the judge of the court of the clergy. And this is why we are living in the society we're living in. But what else does he have to say?
And when a person establishes in his mind an image of himself being healthy, being happy, being loving and beloved, and being successful and prosperous, this will cause the riches of life to gravitate to him. This will motivate him to go out and to make his life rich in every way. And in this way, he will also enrich society.
But the riches of light, Reverend Ike, do not pertain particularly to money.
Well, notice
you can be a very rich person without having much money and be a good citizen and a good religious person.
But notice the order in which I list the riches of light: health, happiness, love, success, prosperity, and money.
But somehow...
But mostly people start with the money thing, just like you. You haven't gotten off of the money yet. I haven't got your health, the happiness, the love yet.
Because you've so identified with raising money, and you say yourself, don't give me any coins, they make noise. Just put that soft stuff in the dollar bill and they collect.
That's true. My church is not a 5- and 10-cent store.
So you do emphasize...
And the Lord's business should be first class, and I operate the Lord's business on a first class basis.
See, now you're the one who has a hang-up about it.
Oh, no, I don't have any hang-ups about it. I'm using it in wonderful ways.
Oh, no, he started shuffling there towards the end. That's not a good look. But gentlemen, I could see where he's coming from with this argument, and you might hear the woman's side of this being like, I'm manifesting my dream man, I'm manifesting my next relationship. Women kind of use similar language, but they miss the overall point. So I want to add to what he was saying. You can't just think, I'm going to have this. You need to think it, and then you need to take conscious steps to reach what it is you want to do. I could think about having $1 million fall into my lap, but that doesn't mean it's going to happen. I have to work towards what I want. I have to make conscious decisions and conscious choices and conscious changes of habit to reach that point. And that's why I don't believe ambition to be bad. I believe it to be necessary. Avarice can be bad, but ambition is not bad, and too many pastors demonize it, or those who try not to end up like that guy and end up shuffling when they get pressed. And then that to me is a humongous issue. But that combined with relationships and how women are getting let off the hook, this is the biggest reason why, in my estimation, and what I'm seeing, is why young men are leaving the church and they're not coming back, because the church has failed them. Ladies and gentlemen, let me know what you think. Let me know if you agree, disagree, what your thoughts are, what your experiences are. I would love to hear them. I think they're extremely important. And I bet you they will help somebody who watches this video, or somebody who just realizes that their experience might not be as crazy or out there as they thought it was, and maybe it might even help you get it off your chest, discuss it, see it written. The written word's powerful. As an author, I can personally tell you that. The written word's very powerful, very therapeutic. I invite you for a free session of therapy if you want to write out in the comment section below. My friends, take care of yourselves. I'm out of here. Have a great day. Peace.